So ask me.
I'll jump in when we actually start talking about the numerals.
Okay. Ask me what my position on missionaries is.
Oh my god.
Or not.
My dad listens to this.
Cash has a dinner date.
Uh-oh.
No, I have to pick up my kids.
That's what you call it now.
That's a dinner date.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm sitting here with Scott, Kaz, Tom, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. Welcome to podcast number 18. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking at Stamp News, Stamp Decal 2015, hashtag Stamp Stories, hashtag Post Secret, and our expert topic of the week is Hawaiian Islands. Stamp News. Linden's reports that Robert E. Zollner has passed away as of December 23rd, 2014, at the age of 82. He has a place in Philatelic history as the first collector of the only two in history to successfully complete a collection of U.S. stamps. This honor has only correctly been bestowed upon one other collector in history, the second of which is none other than the renowned philatelist Bill Gross. Sandakal. So, this last week, some of us attended the annual stamp show Sandakal, which takes place every winter in San Diego, California. Besides the regular show bores, which ended up yielding some excellent stock, there were educational and informational panels, including a town hall panel by last week's guest, Chad Snee. His town hall was meant to cover the inclusion of the Right Side Up Jenny Payne in the next edition of the Scott catalog, and it was meant to last 30 minutes, but instead it went on for an hour. I have to admit, though, the source of that length has kind of a funny backstory. The guy who was supposed to present following Chad needed an old-fashioned projector for his presentation and could not find one. I do have to make a confession. There was a gigantic, beautiful, flat-screen LCD TV hanging on the wall behind him, and I could have probably gotten him hooked up in like 30 seconds. But he just smiled, and I just smiled, and we kept listening to Chad, who was very interesting to listen to. Chad also discussed how huge and unruly the International Scott Catalog has become and brought the idea of changing how the worldwide supplements are released, including by single country or even possibly digital formats in the future. He shared that they are also looking into ways to make the Scott Catalog more interactive in the future, including ways to grow the digital versions that currently exist. There are also quite a few beautiful exhibits on display, including the astonishing collection of obscure cancels and their history found on first pictorial issues of the United States. Also plating the U.S. number 12 and some unusual interesting uses on cover, and an entire 10-panel exhibition dedicated to the 3-cent U.S. commemorative stamp for good old American baseball, which featured a cachet first day cover authentically signed by the legendary Babe Ruth. So besides myself, Jeff and Scott went as well. So what did you guys find there?
Scott, you had a whole stack of stuff.
Yeah, well, I found lots of stamps.
Oh, what a shock.
Oh, yeah. No, I came up with, along with my U.S. collection, I also like to collect the joint issues that the U.S. has issued with other countries. I have been aware for a number of years of a postal card that Italy issued jointly with the United States, and I just happened to find a first day canceled example of that postcard, and knowing that the Scott catalog does not list postal stationery for other countries, I asked Chad Snee if it was possible to, since other joint issues are footnoted, if he could possibly footnote that that exists in the next edition of the catalog, because collectors like me do like to collect the joint issues, and it's just a matter of knowing that it exists to be able to go and look for it. And so I ended up sending him a scan of that postal card after I got home, and he sent me a note, and happily that will be footnoted in next year's 2016 specialized catalog.
Cool.
So, yeah, that was one of the neat little things that I found, happened to just kind of tickle the brain and remind me that, hey, this isn't listed. Let's get it listed.
I'm kind of jealous of those ship canceled cachets that you got with the artwork.
Oh, yeah. I've been collecting those for a couple of years now. I have. I also collect Navy covers with hand-drawn art, and I found a couple of those. One of which had Betty Boop as a mermaid drawn on the cover. So that was kind of interesting as well. What'd you find, Jeff?
I found a really, really good-looking 1 cent Trans Mississippi. I found a really amazing copy of one of those. I picked that up. I got a handful of discounted U.S. classics that aren't in the best shape in the world. They're off-center, but they'll work really well for color reference, including a 70 and what one shares that design? 77?
78.
Yeah, those were two of my favorite things. I picked up a couple of good things there myself, and I loved the exhibits. That first pictorial issue exhibit with all of the neat little small-town cancels.
Killer cancels.
Had some really interesting and really unique stuff that I had never seen before and probably won't unless that guy exhibits again, so.
I got something really cool. Well, I think it's cool. I got a cover that's from Puerto Rico. But it's my first train cover. It has the RMS cancel and the RPO hand stamp. So, and then I looked up and saw what those were, and I was doubly excited.
Cool.
So where was the train going in Puerto Rico?
From Ponce to a bank. I can't remember the exact address, but I just remember it was canceled in Ponce.
Huh. Ponce to San Juan, wasn't it?
Probably. It was really... beautifully manuscript handwriting, just the curls and the Q's and
that one. Yeah,
the iron is kind of rusty on the thing.
That one looks awesome. You'll have to bring that in so you can see it. It looks like a pirate cover.
The way
it was written, it's awesome. Yeah,
sounds like a Facebook post coming.
Yes.
Oh, I should put it on Facebook. I showed it to my dad so he could translate it for me. He's like, yeah, this went to some bank. I was like, oh, cool. Okay, so this week in stamp collecting history. On January 28, 1855, the first locomotive runs from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean on the Panama Railway. And I found a beautiful Canal Zone number 147, 3-cent violet, which depicts the Panama Railroad. And it commemorates the 100th anniversary. So anyone who likes trains on stamps, this one's for you. Okay, updates. Let's start with Cash's corrections.
Well, this isn't really a correction, but... I forgot to tell Chad Snee that his Scott's catalog is a really good resource for me dropping off at the post office so that they can recognize prior postage stamps. Many, many times I brought in stamps and they go, well, you can't use those. Those aren't real stamps. So I can flip open the catalog and say, there it is. Take my letter, please. So
that's what happens when you use stamps from the 30s.
Oh, actually, it's worse in the 70s. In
really?
Particular, like the non-denominational Christmas stamps.
Oh.
You know, because they didn't put forever on them. They just had U.S. postage and a Christmas stamp. And, I mean, I have to look those up to see how much they are. There's 18-cent ones and 20-cent ones, and I don't know which ones are which, so I have to figure out what they are also.
Do you ever use the rate stamps, the A rate, B rate?
Oh, all the time.
Guys?
All the time.
Yeah. When I mail those, I always take a pencil and I write A equals 15 cents, B equals 18 cents. I always write that on the face of the cover next to the stamp so that if somebody, and I always make sure that there's another tagged stamp on there. So if it's just run through the the automatic canceller, that it won't get caught. But if it gets kicked out for some reason, somebody looking at the cover will actually go, okay, that's what this was denominated for. So
yeah, you had me drop off a package that was going overseas, and you did something I'm gonna have to start doing that the postal clerk really appreciated. You actually totaled the postage and put
a
little pencil
all the time, yeah,
underneath. And instead of having to add it up, she went, oh, 422. Okay, you're 5 cents over. But she really appreciated not having to add it up. And that becomes a concern with some of the stuff that all of us send out when you start putting, I don't know, 20, 30, 3 cent commemoratives on one package that are all different.
Well, I used to send a priority package, and I'd get rid of all my scrap postage. And it would cover the back, the front, and the sides. I'd go around the sides.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I'd put the total down for the person because there's no way. I mean, it would take them an hour to add it all up.
Yeah, some postal clerks insist on adding it up, but other postal clerks will take your word for it, especially if it looks like it's a little bit of work.
Yeah. So I know our local post office, they trust Jessica pretty implicitly at this point. If she says there's $6 of postage and it's split up over 80 stamps, they tend to take her word for it.
Yeah, it depends on what you're mailing. Yeah,
she looks honest.
I get postal clerks at my post office, and I know some of them by name. They recognize me when I come in and call me by name, and they don't really question it when they get parcels and stuff like that. But I get other postal clerks at the same post office. I recognize them, and for whatever reason, they don't recognize me, or they're not very sociable or whatever, and they insist on counting every last stamp.
And I think they do it just to be mean.
Oh, some of them are like that.
If you put other weird stamps on a package that aren't in use anymore, like, I don't know, certified mail, express, do those still count? Are those still valid postage just for sending regular stuff now?
Technically, no.
Technically.
Generally speaking.
They're generally accepted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they're technically not.
The
special delivery is a big one.
Special delivery is supposed to be used in the book, and I've read the paragraph. Technically, you're only supposed to use it for priority mail or express mail or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But everybody accepts it. Nobody cares.
I'm going to try to sneak a bisect on my next package. See what happens.
Oh, I want to see a bisect of a forever stamp.
Oh, I put
That'd
on.
That'd be awesome.
You need to do stuff like that. Just don't include it in your postage count.
Yeah.
Oh, but it'd still get canceled. That'd be kind of cool.
Well, I overpay all the time by like a quarter of a cent or half a cent because, you know, you have a 1.5 cent stamp you stick on there.
Start using an X-Acto knife, cut your quarter of a stamp out, and keep it.
I have sheets of those. I have to start doing that.
That's great. Yeah, that'd be kind of interesting. I've never seen that before, not with moderns.
Yeah, you're not supposed to use, like, the Zip Plus 4 stamp and the bulk mail and the all the special.
You can use those if you have a pre-cancel permit.
Well,
which is free to get. Yeah. You just have to present your mail over the counter.
Right.
And they have to verify that you have your permit with you, and it has to be at the post office that issued the permit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's lots of rules, but there's no reason why you can't. And you still have to pay the 49 cents. Your postage has to add up correctly. You just you don't get the discount, but you can still use the postage.
I've only had two items ever returned, and they were both from the 1986 Bicentennial souvenir sheet, where they wrote on it, "These are not stamps." And I just wrote back, "Yes, they are." And, you know, this is a 2 13-cent stamps or whatever it is, and it came back. I sent it again. It came back again. I said, you know, after two times, this is a collector's item, and I kept it. But those are the only two that I ever had that were bounced for bad postage, and it was clearly good postage.
That's funny. I mean, there was one time I took something out of our drop-off bin, and I looked at it, and it was pre-printed postage that somebody here was using that was from the 20s or 30s. It was old. And they still took it. So there's somebody somewhere that got a piece of mail, and if they were a collector, they looked at it and went, wait, what the heck? This is older than I am by 20, 30, 40 years.
Well, people, and I think really they still do, but it's difficult now, but 3-cent commemoratives that are hinged.
Mm-hmm.
If there's ever, you know, if they raise the price from 49 cents to 52 cents, you will start seeing these 3-cent hinge stamps showing up everywhere again.
Yep.
Especially since I have a ton of 49 cent denominated stamps instead of forever stamps.
Yeah.
Okay, listener questions. So we had a listener and Facebook follower from Romania ask us a couple days ago how to properly identify what he believed is a U.S. 596. He had measured the design and was quite sure he had the real deal. But the image he sent didn't look quite right, and he had failed to note if he'd used the perforation gauge to check. So, Scott, what advice do you have to offer our listeners as to the proper identification of this particular stamp?
Well, first of all, get a certificate. You can do all the identification you want, but contact any major auction house, and that's the only answer they will give you. They won't even talk to you about it until you have a certificate on it. Other than that, read the catalog. It is actually full of quite useful information that tells you the design size, it tells you the perforation gauge. Those things alone should be able to eliminate most candidates. It is a rotary press printed stamp, so one characteristic of the rotary press printing is the fact that the stamps were gummed before they were gummed on the press, actually. And so flat plate stamps were printed and the sheets were stacked for the ink to dry. This allowed a little bit of ink to sometimes be offset onto the back of the sheet above it. On these rotary press stamps, you don't have any of that. So if you flip it over and you see that ink, even after the gum has been soaked off, then you know that it was a flat plate printed stamp, and that can help you eliminate some candidates as well.
A 596 specifically, was that printed on waste paper?
It's coil waste.
Coil waste. So does that have any sort of a different appearance than any other stamps with that design?
Yeah, the design size is different.
That's the design size. I know the design size is different, and the catalog gives good specifications.
Right.
But does the paper physically look different at all?
It can.
I'm just impressed we got a question from Romania about a U.S. stamp.
Yeah, Google Translate has been my friend recently.
Yeah. We do have a worldwide audience.
Yep.
Yeah. Shout out to Australia and Canada, because they're like number two and number one.
Yeah. We have some Canadians, eh? Yeah. And some Aussies that listen.
A lot. For that small island, we have a lot of Australian listeners.
Have you seen a map? That's not
small. I've been there. That's not a small island.
Oh, really? I'm thinking like Hawaii or something.
Well, there's a small island underneath it, but
yeah, in comparison.
Okay, so let's move on to stamp stories. This is a good one, so bear with me. Some of us frequently listen to TED Talks. If you're unfamiliar with TED, TED stands for Technology, Education, and Design. TED Talks are internationally famous, discuss the wonderful advances in science and technology, and present the audience with groundbreaking philosophy and thought, and is frequently hosted by intellectual guests such as Bill Gates, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Stephen Hawking, and more. As you can imagine, the show is extremely popular and sought after. Tickets start at $5,000 per seat and have a waiting list of 5 to 6 years out for their main annual shows. So a TED Talk entitled Keeping Secrets. We are bringing this to your attention this week because Frank Warren, a social experimenter, came up with an ingenious way to use mail to free the human spirit. Starting in November 2004, with 3,000 pre-stamped postcards, he went out into the streets of Washington, D.C., handing them out to passersby. They were instructed to write a completely anonymous secret that they had never shared with anyone else and drop it off in the mail. They were all addressed to his house, and he promised that the senders would never be identified. After the initial cards started coming in, he realized he was receiving cards from other cities as well, ones where he had not promoted this idea. His numbers increased and kept growing and growing and growing. His local postal carrier has now delivered 500,000 postcards to his mailbox from all over the world, and his vast collection of postcards in his basement of his house that threatens to take up the entire space. His receipts have included such revealed secrets as, quote, "Everyone who knew me before 9/11 thinks I'm dead." Another one, "I make fun of my friend because she is scared of the Ferris wheel, but secretly, I'm just as scared as she is." Another one, "I secretly fear that heaven will be boring."
Oh, no.
One more, "My secret is that I'd rather wake up next to my dog than my husband." Oh, my.
That was Jessica's.
Oh. Oh.
Get you back, Jeff.
Oh, my gosh.
Take no prisoners.
His mailbox has since become famous and has its own social media accounts and has been featured in the news as well as many locations. He believes that his project took off because he has given people the opportunity to free themselves anonymously from a lifetime of burden, and that people are truly grateful for this experience. Why do you think this project took off? Do you have any secrets you'd like to share? You can send him an anonymous postcard to Frank at 13345 Copper Ridge Road, Germantown, Maryland, 20874. He also has a website, postsecret.com, and he also creates several coffee table books based on this topic. So tell us if you did send a secret or not at hashtag stamp stories, hashtag postsecret. So our expert topic of the week is Hawaiian postage stamps. And just on one note, I went to Wikipedia to look this up, and there is exactly like 200 words on the subject. So we're going to expand on that.
So, Tom, what do you think?
I don't talk to me about Hawaii.
You just bought a book on it. Did you read it yet?
Yeah,
I didn't buy a book on Hawaiian.
Well,
stamps.
No, but talk about the book you just got.
Nope.
Tom doesn't like talking.
No, I can't. Tom,
I can't remember what the book is.
You don't like to be put on the spot.
No, I hate it.
Actually. Okay, Jessica, throw it over here.
I don't know.
Okay, so Kaj, what can you tell us about Hawaiian postage stamps?
Well, let's talk about first the easy part is, and it's really not the easy part. But
they're from
the
Hawaii.
There you go.
Why don't you start with the Hawaiian Islands were discovered by Captain Cook?
No, they actually were discovered by people before that, and we have proof of it because when Captain Cook showed up, there were people there.
Yeah. You mean the Hawaiians?
Yeah, but they killed him on his third voyage.
That's true. So the first stamps of Hawaii, they're called the missionaries.
That is because?
They were used by missionaries to mail stuff back to the United States and ask for donations.
They had to get the natives in line after killing Captain Cook.
Well, there you go.
So we sent some missionaries and they had to write home?
Well,
punished them with religion.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's interesting at the time because the Hawaiian flag is made up of the French flag, the British flag, and the U.S. flag, because they actually didn't want to commit themselves to any single country. And we sort of won through various means. But anyway, the missionaries, they call them missionaries because I believe all the stamps that were found have basically been sent back to East Coast cities by the missionaries, basically telling of their good works. And they're incredibly rare. And they are incredibly faked. And there are some very famous fakes called the Grinnell fakes. And other than that, I mean, if you get one, chances are you
a
fake.
those are going to fall again into the category of the auction house won't talk to you until you get a certificate, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
We're talking anywhere from tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars for these stamps.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I live in a missionary town near one, so I always go to the antique store and look for these, hoping that one of our missionaries sent one home.
Hey, you never know.
Hey, it is possible. It is possible. But the second, what people will actually see when they're dealing with Hawaii or the Hawaii numerals. And these were made really on the low-tech end. They were printed on letterpress with movable type. And because they moved around, you know, when they set them up, they weren't engraved.
Every time they did a new printing, they reassembled from the movable type.
Oh.
And so that's why you have so many different characteristics and why each position is identifiable. So,
I was going to ask that. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So when people fake them, they are printing them off a lithograph or something like that, not realizing that these were printed by letterpress and that they not only do not have complete frame lines, they have breaks, they have slightly ajar or askew numbers and letters. And because of this, they are all plateable. So if you get a numeral, the first thing you need to do in order to find out if you have a real one or not is get one of the books and plate it. And if it plates, it's real. And if it doesn't plate, it's not. And as a matter of fact, Tom brought in his plating book.
Well, yeah, actually, what I've been taught recently by one of the guys that we know who deals in Hawaiian and other back-of-the-book stuff is the easiest way to do it is two books, which is the first one is the Westerberg book, which actually discusses all the plate positions so that you can take your stamp and see what it plates to. And if you can't plate it from there, you're pretty much done at that point if you can't find the right position. But if you can find the right position in that, you can use another book, which is the put out that was called the Batnam book, the large Batnams, which is actually the large center numeral is what they called it in the middle of the stamp. And each one of those is identifiable compared to its plate position.
Right. So one of the real quick tests is that there are very few. I don't think there are any, but I'm covering myself by saying very few just so that I don't have to make a correction next week, where the frame lines are look like actual frame lines, where they meet up nice in the corners and they're complete and everything. I do not believe that there is a numeral printed that has nice, clean frame lines.
I'll save you the trouble. You're correct. There are no authentic examples where all four corners meet completely.
And when you look at the fakes, they lithographed them and they drew them in and they did.
Lot of times they meet and you can eliminate it right away just by looking at the corners and saying, well, these meet, so therefore it's never going to plate. It doesn't have the breaks in the corners that a genuine example would have. And so you can immediately say this is a fake. It's a real easy, quick litmus test that will eliminate probably about half of the numerals that you look at.
I think way more than half. Yeah, I have in my personal collection, I have no clue how many because I have a stock page and they're all overlapped. And I have an entire stock page filled with fake numerals, whereas real numerals, I probably only have about 20. So if that's an indication of rarity, I'd say that fakes that number real by about 25 to 1.
Wow. So the easy general rule is if all four frame lines intersect perfectly and cleanly, then it's fake.
And if you have little gaps where they're off or they're not well lined up or they're not at a – they'll always be at like a 90 degree.
Then you can try to plate those.
Then you can try to plate them, yeah.
Are they worth infinitely more on cover?
Well, not I wouldn't say infinitely. But
I like big words. Okay? No,
they are worth significantly more.
There
yes,
we go.
Yes, yes. And that is, if you just know how to recognize the frame lines, you can go around at shows, and there's a lot of dealers who don't know exactly what they're doing. And you will find them. They will tend to always think that their stuff is real and try to charge you a real price.
Oh, of course.
But you can look at them and say, this has a chance of actually being real. And, you know, you're charging me $10 for something that probably is worth $200. I think I'll take a chance.
Hmm. That'd be a good thing to pick up to be able to pull those out at shows.
Yep.
Now, the ones that we saw at SandyCal at the exhibit, because they were not for sale, were these tied with U.S. stamps.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the reason for that?
Because
they generally would send them off, and they would come through the port of San Francisco a lot of times. And so you would have to pay not only the postage to San Francisco, but then from San Francisco across the country. And so the U.S. stamps were for the cross-country part of the journey. And the Hawaiian stamps were just to get it to San Francisco.
And get it to the boat?
Yeah, during the time period, there were various people who commented because it seemed as though the Hawaiian Post Office was actually just a division of the San Francisco Post Office because there were so many U.S. stamps being used on Hawaiian mail, not inter-island. So.
Right. You do notice that on the numerals, they do say inter-island postage.
Oh, true.
And that's because they were for local use. but they were also for use in getting it mailed to the United States.
So it's more like on the island or from island to island?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they had different rates for everything. I believe their rate for the longest time was 5 cents. Edit that out. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that would be another cash correction.
Yeah, yeah.
Oops.
I'm just going to have to correct myself because I know that inter-island, if it was the same island, it was 1 cent or 2 cents. And I believe they made the 5 center for if you went over a certain certain distance, or if you went to the U.S. mainland.
Was there like a double rate for extra thick or multiple pages?
Oh, yeah.
Any way they could squeeze you for more money.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So then the second way to, let's say, make money on Hawaiian stamps is right now the really fastest growing part of the Hawaiian stamp market is people collecting cancels. And there are a wide array of cancels. There are two types. There are, first of all, because it's an island, there's a whole bunch of ship cancels. And the second is that because the islands are all scattered, you have very, very small towns. So you have people who collect the various types of ships and the various small towns. And there are some little towns that, there's a small handful, and these things sell for hundreds and hundreds of dollars now. And, 10 years ago, nobody cared. But the interesting thing about town councils in Hawaii, they have cross-reference books that you can purchase. And if you can see three letters on a town with just a very, very few exceptions, if you can see three letters, you can read the entire town council because all the names of the towns are so different that you can recognize the town by just seeing three letters on the council. And I think some of the towns just have names that are incredible. very, very long.
Well, I think when first time I went to Hawaii, one of the things that I thought was really neat was they have the only town in the United States that's spelled with all vowels. it's Aiea, and you pronounce each of the vowels. It's A-I-E-A. And so I just thought that was really, really neat. Something about Hawaii that I never knew.
Then you also have some sugar mill cancels. And some plantation cancels, which are really cool. And it's really, really a neat topic that if you're not aware of Hawaiian cancels, look into it. Of course, you're kind of entering late in the game, but there are still so much unsearched Hawaii out there that hasn't, come to the collecting market that you can still find these really rare cancels.
Well, things move in and out of the conscious circles of collecting because some collector might be a hermit or he might pass away and his kids just never sell his collection and it just sits for 20 or 30 or 50 years before it comes back on the market. And it just kind of passes out of the knowledge of the collecting community. So, I mean, even in United States stamps, there are quote-unquote finds every now and then as things are rediscovered. And, the catalog editors like to see evidence of rare items every so often, and then they question their continued existence every now and then because they haven't been seen in many, many years. So, but Hawaii is just like that, and although maybe a little bit more so because Hawaii wasn't as popular back in the day as it is now. I mean, really, with any collecting field, you can find that. Things kind of get put away and they get forgotten about for a while, many, many years at times.
Plus, the cool thing about Hawaii, with the exception of the Confederate States of America, Hawaii was an actual country that is now a state. And it has an interesting history of how it, King Kamehameha united it. Basically because he had British guns all the way up to when the Americans on the island said basically, hey, let's turn this into a state. And so they basically had a little pocket revolution and took over the place. And, they have a very interesting history of how they became a state. And it whenever you have something I tell people, you know, this all the time is, you know, the real value in an item is the story behind it. It's really neat to have a Hawaii number 62, but knowing the story behind it is, in my opinion, more of I get more joy out of knowing the story than having a Hawaii number 62 hinged into my album.
Did they have any unique ways of getting the mail island to island?
You mean like outrigger canoe or something like that?
Well, tin can mail. So I was thinking.
No, I don't think there was anything interesting like that.
Well, also
balloons.
Yeah. No Hawaiian balloon mail.
No, they had steamers. I mean, this was in the Industrial Revolution era. You know, you had steamers going all over the place and traveling around.
Are there any Hawaiian fancy cancels?
Oh, lots.
Ooh.
Well, it depends on how you define fancy, but yes.
Well, sort of the philatelic definition of a fancy cancel.
I mean, I don't think that they have a cancellation with like a hula girl on it or anything like that, but they have some really neat steamer cancels. They have some really neat patent cancels. They have a lot of very scarce, like just HI in a circle, which doesn't sound very fancy, but those are kind of cool too. And then, of course, the opium stamps. The dollar values were used to pay mostly opium. And those were canceled with really neat Maltese crosses and the like, which those are interesting because Maltese cross on a dollar value stamp used to devalue it. Because it was a revenue usage. And today people look at these and go, no, I want that stamp. That's cool. And so the value on these Maltese crosses and stuff are going up dramatically because they were so depressed because everybody thought revenue cancels were cheap and valueless. Plus, it's drug-related.
So is an opium stamp then worth more used than mint?
Well, if it's mint, it's a postage stamp. If it's mint with a Maltese cancel, then they put it on a bill of sale or bill of lading, whatever they called it, to pay the tax for the drugs.
Well, I think we ought to mention the Hawaii Philatelic Society.
Oh.
The Hawaiian Philatelic Society before we conclude.
They don't. Do they have a website? Because all I have is the stamp shows.
I'm sure they do. Also, we should mention the missionary stamps by Fred Gregory and his post office in Paradise website.
Oh, Fred is a fantastic collector. He has a great book.
If you want a quick course in identifying your Hawaiian stamps, the fakes and the forgeries and that, especially from the early issues, the numerals and the Boston
everything, usages, which printing it is.
The post office in Paradise is a really, really useful website, and it's free to use. But I do highly recommend his books, too, because they're very informative, and they look really nice on the shelf after you read them.
I'll definitely check those resources out, because there's nothing. It's so hard to find anything on this topic.
You didn't look very hard.
Uh-oh. Well, Wikipedia is,
And you didn't ask.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I mean, if you pulled up, like Scott said, if you pulled up a post office in Paradise, you know, you'd have 45 web pages of information on it, of everything.
Yeah, but that's another thing. You're quite new to collecting, and you're surrounded by people who have been collecting for
more than a month.
A couple months longer than you. Yeah. And so, I mean, really, that's another recommendation for getting in contact with other people that collect, because they can point you in the direction of resources where you can educate yourself. You don't have to. It's just a real quick interaction. They can point you in the right direction. Off you can go. Because a lot of times the journey for finding the information is as much fun or more fun than it is just finding the item, too. So.
Well, plus just go to the banknote issues of Hawaii and read the stories on these guys. Princess Laiki Laiki and King David Kalukala. and I'm probably pronouncing
butchering those names.
There's next week's Cash's corrections.
Well, yes. I don't think
Cash is going to Cash is going to practice pronouncing
with all
the royal family's names.
Yeah,
the Hawaiian royal family's names. Well, and he will have corrections next week.
I swear, at the beginning, I thought he was coming out with Princess Leia.
I did too.
I swear, I heard an L before you corrected yourself.
He went Princess Leia, like.
Yeah, how about Leilukalani?
Leilukalani.
Nice try, but we'll get you to practice over this week. Then you can issue your correction next week.
Hey, I'm a, what can I say?
Not Hawaiian.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll post the links to those in our show notes so you guys can check those out. Now it's time for to open our inverted Jenny, hopefully. Drum roll, please.
There go the scissors.
It didn't come from the post office.
Not from the fulfillment center. Uh-oh.
Nope. Doesn't look thick enough.
Dear.
Really?
Really. From here, I can tell.
Normal.
Oh.
Oh. Wah, wah.
Okay, you can email us at stampshowhereytoday@gmail.com, stampshowht on Twitter, Facebook is stampshowhereytoday, and our website is stampshowhereytoday.com with your questions and comments. You can leave us your questions and comments also on our Google Voice answer machine anytime. The number is 949-873-4298. There's also a link to the Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hello, I am Sean. I am Troy. And this is Stamp Show Here Today.
I'm Brian Metz with OCStampStore.com with your stamp tip of the week. When you're looking at your 10-cent 1851 to 59 issue, look at the top and the bottom of your stamp. We're going to look for Type 4. Type 4 is a recut at the top or the bottom, or sometimes both. Specifically, you're going to be looking at the left and right X above the POS of U.S. postage or below the EN space CENT of 10 cents. If you see a line with clear breaks or is substantially darker than the rest of the design, then you have a good candidate for a Type 4, and I recommend sending this item in for a cert. For more U.S. stamp tips, sign up for my newsletter at OCStampStore.com.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today. Such number, no such soul. Return to sender.